Dear congregation, it disturbs me to tell you that a plague has been troubling our country for more than two decades, and it is showing little signs of going away. This plague emanates from hundreds of hospitality establishments and eateries around the country. It cleverly promises succor, nay, even pleasure. And it does so during all daylight hours and even beyond. In our era of boundless choice, it offers even more choice. It cunningly seduces us to believe that it should be welcomed as a wonderful addition to our requirements for modern convenience and our need for instant gratification. It remains, nonetheless, a pestilent phenomenon. I speak, dear Unitarian brethren, about the all-day breakfast that has been blighting our land socially, culturally, and spiritually for too long. So my address to you this morning offers some thoughts on food and food culture, on fasting and moderation. It is entitled Food, Fasting, and 40 Days. Food, after all, is something, possibly one of the few things that we all love. Going back in time, a love of food permeates so many aspects of human life, from the sustenance it provides, the celebration and bonding that it enables, to its role in more formal and contemplative ritual. Foods, fruits, and vegetables play a significant role in the text of Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. These religious texts provide insights into the spiritual and cultural significance of various foods, often attributing specific symbolism and importance to them. Indeed, food is central in many of the great narratives in the Bible. From the miracle of the loaves and fishes that fed a multitude of 5,000 to the story of the Last Supper. In literature, painting, indeed in all the arts, food has a story to tell. The works of Shakespeare are replete with such references. Indeed, a character in Twelfth Night shows a very prescient attitude to consuming red meat when, conscious of his growing stupidity, he declares, "But I am a great eater of meat, and I believe that does harm to my wits." A country's food, culture, and gastronomy say much about its identity. When we speak of France or Italy, we immediately consider each's distinct culinary tradition. When a friend returns from a holiday in a foreign country, our first question is often, "What was the food like?" But as much as we love the presence of food, we fear its absence. The absence of food can mean hunger. The fear of hunger has haunted mankind since the start of time. Famine is hellish and unspeakable. Yet, on a positive note, for most of the last 70 years, thanks to industrialized intensive farming, the supply of food has considerably outstripped the demand for food. Over this period, hunger resulting from famine has been caused by war rather than any lack of food globally. But this abundance of food has come at a price in the excessive use of fertilizers and pesticides in its production. This destruction of land and the environment cannot continue if global warming and climate change are to be mitigated. So we are beginning to witness a long-term commitment internationally to the development of sustainable food production methods with a lower environmental footprint, producing food of higher nutritional quality, cultivating diverse climate-resilient crops, and building healthy soils has become crucial, particularly in Africa and in a number of developing countries. However, with changes in food production, we are also seeing changes in food consumption. We have begun to rethink what and how we consume, linking healthy eating and diet to long-term health. I am what I eat. There are growing concerns in terms of ill health and possible obesity about the consumption of highly processed foods. Such foods are usually produced on a large scale and in centralized locations. They have a whiff of the factory and chemical additives rather than the scent of the green field and a wholesomeness. However, we can observe a turn away from such processed foods towards foods produced locally, sustainably, organically, and seasonally. Some 15 years ago, I attended a conference organized by the EU Commission in Brussels about climate change and sustainability. At one point during the conference, a very senior and highly respected scientist at the Commission declared, with some Shakespearean relish, "In the future, you will all have to eat less meat." His declaration was met by some shock and awe among attendees, I clearly remember. Today, however, such a comment is more likely to provoke agreement. In the same vein, our supermarkets are full of vegetables and imported fruit from all parts of the world, offering wonderful choice and the promise of year-round asparagus and strawberries. Yet there is a growing realization of the real cost in carbon miles of transporting such food, and increasingly a consumer is likely to consider their provenance, to privilege local production, and give more deliberate deliberation to seasonal availability. In sum, we are all beginning to approach food and to consume food in a more thoughtful and responsible way. So at this stage, it behoves me to declare, in the future, you're all going to have to eat fewer all-day breakfasts. In so encouraging you, I would point out that I did some real-time research in this regard. I recently enjoyed a full Irish breakfast with all the extras at 4 p.m. on a Monday in an eatery near where I live. And enjoy it I did, until I emerged back onto the street to a darkening evening. It would soon be nighttime, and I had just had my breakfast. I began to feel disoriented. The natural cycle of things seemed disrupted. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 to 11 came to haunt me. "To everything there is a season, and a time to every matter under the heavens. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted." The full 11 verses of this remind us beautifully of the inherent cyclicality and natural seasonality of all life. As well as disorientation, an hour later, the rumblings in my stomach reminded me that what I had eaten was in large part highly processed and perhaps none too healthy. Further, the production of this breakfast food was likely none too sustainable. And here was me with an interest in issues of sustainability for almost two decades, letting the side down, so to speak. But how did it happen that I came to eat my breakfast at 4 p.m.? Well, because I could. Restaurant innovation enables us now. Whatever you want now, you can have now. We live in an era bedeviled by the need for instantaneity. The BBC journalist Richard Fisher, in his recent book entitled The Long View, describes this need for the instant, as the tyranny of the instant and the treadmill of the unending present. In the US, a national fixture, the car drive-through, is enjoying a fresh surge as post-pandemic customers crave speed and solitude. Car drive-through traffic has risen by more than 30% over the last 3 years. Its customers want their food instantly and to consume it alone in a car, the very opposite to the celebration of food. Incidentally, I ate my all-day breakfast on my own, and while the experience was reasonably enjoyable, it certainly was not celebratory. I spoke earlier about the absence of food in the fearful sense that it may lead to hunger. However, fasting is the absence of food in a positive and often uplifting sense. Abstaining from food for a period of time has well-established benefits for our physical body. And fasting also has benefits for the soul, reminding us of the need for moderation, self-discipline, sacrifice, and even purification at certain occasions in our lives. Put simply, fasting can make us stronger, more worthy, and more spiritual beings. And all the world's religions understand this and encourage us to undertake periods of food abstinence. We think of Lent, Ramadan, Yom Kippur in the Abrahamic faiths, but Hinduism and Buddhism also have rich traditions of fasting for both religious and personal and health reasons. Further, there is scientific evidence that faith-based fasting is not only good for the individual and the community, but also good for the environment, the planet, and sustainable living. So it's a win-win situation. The New Testament tells us that Jesus fasts for 40 days before starting his public ministry, a fasting that also strengthens him against the temptations of Satan. The 40 days of Lent are also a reminder of this preparatory period of fasting. The Old Testament prophets Moses and Elijah also fast for 40 days in preparation for their respective visits to Mount Sinai and Mount Horeb. The Latin for 40 gives us the word quarantine, which originally referred to the period of time a ship had to wait off a country's port if its passengers were disease-stricken. So the idea of 40 days goes back a long time. to ask us to fast or engage in a period of spiritual preparation for 40 days is quite an ask. But Satan is a formidable enemy, not one easily disoriented by an all-day breakfast. As I conclude, I would like to recount very briefly my own encounter with a 40-day task. 6 years ago, I completed a sadhana in Kundalini yoga. Such a sadhana involves a disciplined daily practice and meditation, repeated in the same routine over a 40-day period. The purpose is to purify, to detach oneself from material things, and to seek to achieve a higher consciousness. A sadhana has deep roots in Hindu religion and Buddhist philosophy. So each morning in my home, I did some 50 minutes of strenuous yoga exercise, followed by a short meditation with music. If a day was missed, the whole routine would have to start over again. When I did complete it, my yoga teacher was delighted and introduced me to her personal guru, who in turn invited me to participate in a fascinating yoga workshop. So, whatever about achieving higher consciousness, there was some benefit and reward. However, I hasten to add that I have not yet done another one. To conclude, our task on earth is to try and lead an authentic, worthy, and decent life. Any written advice on how to do so, whether it be from a self-help book or a religious text, will deal at length about the role of food. Food is a profound part of our life. We should approach food thoughtfully, even mindfully. Consider the provenance of the food we eat, where it comes from, and how it is produced. Such consideration impacts not only on our personal well-being, but also on planet Earth. Give thanks for the food we are privileged to eat. As a mark of respect, think about lighting a candle one day a week with the main meal of the day. In our world that constantly demands that we consume more now, consider a little moderation. And no can be quite positive at times. Amen.